Welcome to Building Passive Income, the podcast for professionals, entrepreneurs, and investors who want to build wealth, diversify beyond Wall Street, and create true financial freedom through passive commercial real estate investing. I'm Wayne Courageous III, founding and managing principal of CREI Partners, a leading commercial real estate company. I created CREI Colin, an AI-powered resource to serve as your investor education guide, built on the insights and experience we've developed at CREI Partners. CREI Colin is here to educate you through passive investing and tax strategy topics to help your journey in passive investing. Just a quick disclaimer, this podcast and CREI Colin is for educational purposes only and is not legal, tax, or investment advice. Always consult with your attorney, CPA, and financial advisor before making any investment decisions. I've spent nearly two decades helping investors understand the power of commercial real estate, from multifamily to storage to retail. Each episode is under 15 minutes, simple to follow, and packed with insights to help you grow your income and protect your capital without becoming a landlord. If you're ready to learn quickly and invest smarter, you're in the right place. Welcome to Building Passive Income. Let's build wealth together. Here's CREI Colin.
Welcome back to Building Passive Income. I'm CREI Colin. Last week, we wrapped up our discussion on physical due diligence. We talked about property condition assessments, phase one environmental reports, deferred maintenance, and major systems. This week, we're continuing with physical and environmental due diligence, but we're going deeper into some critical topics that can make or break your deal. Today, we're talking about phase two environmental assessments. On episode 53, we covered phase one environmental assessments. We talked about what they are, what they look for, and how to read the report. But what happens when the phase one identifies recognized environmental conditions, or RECs? That's when you may need a phase two environmental assessment, depending on the severity and lender or consultant recommendations. A phase two is more invasive. It involves soil sampling, groundwater testing, and laboratory analysis to determine if contamination is actually present and how extensive it is. Phase two assessments are expensive. They can cost $10,000 to $50,000 or more, depending on the scope of the investigation. But if you skip the phase two when you need one, you could be buying a property with hundreds of thousands of dollars in environmental liability. At CREI Partners, protecting investor capital starts with eliminating unknown risks. And environmental risk is one of the biggest. So today, I'm going to teach you when to order a phase two, what it includes, how to read the report, and what to do with the findings. Let's dive in. When do you need a phase two? You may need a phase two environmental assessment when the phase one identifies recognized environmental conditions, depending on the severity and lender or consultant recommendations. Not all RECs require a phase two. Some RECs are minor and can be addressed without further testing. Here's when you should consider ordering a phase two. Situation one, the phase one identifies on-site contamination. If the phase one identifies evidence of contamination on the property itself, you'll likely need a phase two. Examples include underground storage tanks, USTs, that may have leaked, stained soil, unusual odors, historical use as a gas station, dry cleaner, or industrial site, visible evidence of petroleum products or hazardous substances. If the phase one consultant recommends a phase two, you should strongly consider ordering one. Situation two, the phase one identifies contamination on nearby properties. Even if your property is clean, contamination from nearby properties can migrate onto your site. If the phase one identifies contamination on adjacent or nearby properties, you may need a phase two to determine if that contamination has migrated onto your property. This is especially important if the nearby property is upgradient, meaning groundwater may flow toward your property. A known contaminated site listed on regulatory databases. A historical source of contamination, like a gas station or industrial facility. Situation three, the lender requires it. Sometimes your lender will require a phase two, even if the phase one doesn't identify significant RECs. Lenders are conservative. If there's any indication of potential contamination, they may require a phase two to protect collateral value and ensure the asset can be refinanced or sold. Situation four, you're planning major renovations or demolition. If you're planning to renovate or demolish the property, you may need a phase two to identify any contamination that could be disturbed during construction. This is especially important for properties built before the late 1970s, when asbestos and lead-based paint were more commonly used. Situation 5. You want to further reduce uncertainty. Even if the phase one doesn't identify significant wrecks, some investors choose additional testing to further reduce uncertainty. This is more common with high-value properties or properties with historical uses that pose environmental risks. When you don't need a phase two. You typically don't need a phase two if 1. The phase one identifies no wrecks. 2. The phase one identifies only minor wrecks that don't warrant further investigation. 3. The seller provides documentation that contamination has already been remediated and closed with regulatory approval. 4. You decide to walk away from the deal based on the phase one findings. What does a phase two include? A phase two environmental assessment is more invasive than a phase one. It involves physical testing to determine if contamination is present. Here's what a typical phase two includes. 1. Soil sampling. The environmental consultant drills boreholes at various locations on the property. They collect soil samples from different depths. The number of boreholes and the depth of sampling depend on the size of the property and the suspected contamination. The soil samples are sent to a laboratory for analysis. 2. Groundwater testing. If there's a risk of groundwater contamination, the consultant installs monitoring wells. Monitoring wells are small diameter wells that allow the consultant to collect groundwater samples. The groundwater samples are sent to a laboratory for analysis. 3. Laboratory analysis. The laboratory tests the soil and groundwater samples for petroleum products, gasoline, diesel, heating oil, volatile organic compounds, VOCs, semi-volatile organic compounds, SVOCs, heavy metals, lead, arsenic, mercury, other contaminants based on the suspected source. The laboratory compares the test results to regulatory standards to determine if contamination is present and if it exceeds allowable levels. 4. Report. The consultant writes a report that summarizes the findings. The report includes description of the sampling methodology, location of boreholes and monitoring wells, laboratory test results, comparison to regulatory standards, extent of contamination, if present, recommendations for remediation, if needed. How to read a phase two report. Phase two reports can be technical and complex, but you don't need to be an environmental scientist to understand the key findings. Here's how to read a phase two report. Step one, start with the executive summary. The executive summary is the most important part of the report. It summarizes the findings and tells you whether contamination was found. Look for, was contamination detected? What type of contamination was found? Does it exceed regulatory standards? What are the recommended next steps? Step 2. Review the laboratory results. The report will include tables showing the laboratory test results for each sample. The tables will show the location of each sample, the depth of each sample, the concentration of each contaminant, the regulatory standard for each contaminant, whether the sample exceeds the regulatory standard. If the concentration exceeds the regulatory standard, that's a problem. It means contamination is present at levels that require remediation. Step 3. Review the extent of contamination. If contamination is found, the report will describe the extent of the contamination. This includes how widespread is the contamination? Is it limited to one area or spread across the property? How deep is the contamination? Is it in the surface soil or has it migrated to groundwater? What is the source of the contamination? The extent of contamination determines the cost and complexity of remediation. Step 4. Review the recommendations. The consultant will provide recommendations for next steps. Common recommendations include additional testing to better define the extent of contamination, remediation to clean up the contamination, regulatory notification and oversight, institutional controls, legal or regulatory restrictions on how the property can be used. No further action if contamination is below regulatory standards. What to do if the phase two finds contamination? If the phase two finds contamination, there are 5 primary paths experienced sponsors take. Option 1, walk away. If the contamination is extensive and the cleanup costs are too high, walk away. Environmental remediation is expensive and complicated. It can take months or years to complete, and it involves regulatory oversight. If the cost and complexity are too great, it's better to walk away and find another property. Option 2. Negotiate a lower purchase price. If the contamination is limited and the cleanup costs are reasonable, you can negotiate a lower purchase price. Here's how it works. 1. Get a cost estimate for remediation from an environmental consultant or remediation contractor. 2. Ask the seller to reduce the purchase price by the cost of remediation. 3. You take ownership of the property and handle the remediation yourself. This option works if the contamination is well-defined and the remediation cost is predictable. You have experience managing environmental remediation. Your lender is willing to finance a property with known contamination. In many cases, the best deals are the ones where risks are clearly identified and properly priced, not avoided entirely. Option 3. Require the seller to remediate before closing. If the contamination is significant, you can require the seller to clean it up before closing. This is the best option if you don't want to deal with the remediation yourself. Your lender won't finance a property with known contamination. The seller is willing and able to complete the remediation. The challenge with this option is that remediation can take months or years. You may need to extend your due diligence period or delay the closing. Option 4. Get environmental insurance. If you're willing to take on some risk, you can purchase environmental insurance. Environmental insurance covers the cost of cleanup if contamination is discovered after you buy the property or if the remediation costs exceed the estimate. There are two main types of environmental insurance. 1. Pollution legal liability insurance covers cleanup costs and third-party claims for contamination that occurs during your ownership. 2. Cost cap insurance covers cost overruns if the remediation costs exceed the estimate. Environmental insurance can help mitigate risk, but coverage varies and should be evaluated carefully. Premiums can be expensive, and policies have exclusions and limitations. Option 5. Implement institutional controls. In some cases, you can leave the contamination in place and implement institutional controls. Institutional controls are legal or regulatory restrictions on how the property can be used that prevent exposure to contamination. Examples include deed restrictions that prohibit residential use, restrictions on groundwater use, requirements for vapor barriers or other engineering controls. This option works if the contamination is deep underground and doesn't pose a risk to current users. The cost of remediation is prohibitive. Regulatory agencies approve the institutional controls. The downside is that institutional controls can limit your ability to sell or redevelop the property in the future. How much does a Phase 2 cost? The cost of a Phase 2 depends on the scope of the investigation. Costs can vary widely depending on scope, site conditions, and region. Factors that affect cost include the size of the property, the number of boreholes and monitoring wells, the depth of sampling, the number of samples, the type of laboratory analysis. As a general rule, basic Phase 2, limited sampling, $10,000 to $20,000. Standard Phase 2, moderate sampling, $20,000 to $40,000. Comprehensive Phase 2, extensive sampling, $40,000 to $100,000 plus. If the Phase 2 identifies contamination and you need additional testing to define the extent, costs can increase significantly. How much does remediation cost? Remediation costs vary widely depending on the type and extent of contamination. These are broad industry ranges. Actual costs depend heavily on site conditions, regulatory requirements, and contamination severity. Here are some general cost ranges. Soil remediation, excavation and disposal, digging up contaminated soil and hauling it to a landfill, $50 to $200 per ton. Soil vapor extraction, removing volatile contaminants from soil, $50,000 to $200,000. Bioremediation, using microorganisms to break down contaminants, $30,000 to $150,000. Groundwater remediation, pump and treat, pumping contaminated groundwater and treating it, $100,000 to $500,000 plus. In situ chemical oxidation, injecting chemicals to break down contaminants, $50,000 to $300,000. Monitored natural attenuation, allowing natural processes to break down contaminants. $10,000 to $50,000 per year for monitoring. Underground storage tank, UST removal. Tank removal and soil remediation, $20,000 to $100,000 per tank. These are rough estimates. Actual costs depend on the specific site conditions and regulatory requirements. Experienced sponsors don't guess here. They quantify risk before moving forward. Red flags in a Phase 2 report. Here are the red flags to look for in a Phase 2 report. Red flag 1. Contamination exceeds regulatory standards. If the laboratory results show contamination levels that exceed regulatory standards, that's a problem. It means remediation is required. And remediation is expensive. Red flag 2. Contamination is widespread. If the contamination is spread across the entire property, remediation will be more expensive and complex. Limited contamination in one area is easier and cheaper to clean up. Red flag 3. Groundwater contamination. Groundwater contamination is more serious than soil contamination. Groundwater moves. Contamination can migrate off-site and affect neighboring properties. Groundwater remediation is also more expensive and takes longer than soil remediation. Red flag 4. Unknown source of contamination. If the consultant can't identify the source of the contamination, that's a problem. It means there may be additional contamination that hasn't been discovered yet. Red flag 5. Regulatory involvement required. If the contamination requires regulatory notification and oversight, that adds complexity and cost. You'll need to work with state or federal environmental agencies. They'll require regular reporting and may impose additional requirements. Red flag 6. Contamination migrating from off-site. If the contamination is migrating from a neighboring property, in some cases you may not be the responsible party, but contamination can still impact your property and operations. And if the responsible party doesn't clean it up, you may be stuck with the problem. How Phase 2 findings affect your underwriting. If the Phase 2 finds contamination, you need to adjust your underwriting. Here's how. 1. Add remediation costs to your budget. If you're planning to remediate the contamination, add the estimated cost to your acquisition budget. Include a contingency of 20% to 30% for cost overruns. 2. Extend your timeline. Remediation takes time. It can take months or years to complete. Factor this into your business plan. You may not be able to lease or sell the property until remediation is complete. 3. Account for regulatory costs. If regulatory oversight is required, you'll have ongoing costs for monitoring, reporting, and compliance. Budget for these costs in your operating expenses. 4. Consider the impact on value. Contamination can affect the property's value. Even after remediation, buyers may be wary of a property with a history of contamination. This can affect your exit strategy and resale value. 5. Evaluate financing options. Some lenders won't finance a property with known contamination. If your lender won't finance the deal, you may need to find alternative financing or walk away. Understanding environmental liability. Here's something critical to understand. Environmental liability can transfer with ownership, even if you didn't cause the contamination. This is why proper due diligence before closing is so important. A Phase 1 environmental assessment that meets all appropriate inquiry standards can help you qualify for certain liability protections under CERCLA, assuming you also meet ongoing compliance requirements. But if you skip the Phase 1 or Phase 2 when you need one, you lose those protections. Final thoughts. A Phase 2 environmental assessment is a critical tool for evaluating environmental risk. If the Phase 1 identifies recognized environmental conditions, you may need a Phase 2 to determine if contamination is actually present and how extensive it is, depending on the severity and lender or consultant recommendations. Phase 2 assessments are expensive, but they're worth it. They help you make an informed decision about whether to move forward with the deal, negotiate a lower purchase price, or walk away. If the Phase 2 finds contamination, there are 5 primary paths experienced sponsors take. You can walk away, negotiate a lower price, require the seller to remediate, get environmental insurance, or implement institutional controls. But whatever you do, don't ignore the findings. Environmental liability is serious, and it can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars if you're not careful. Remember, in many cases, the best deals are the ones where risks are clearly identified and properly priced, not avoided entirely. Tomorrow, we're talking about title commitments and surveys. We'll cover what they are, how to read them, and what red flags to look for. Thanks for listening. I'm CREI Colin. Let's keep building passive income together.
Thanks for tuning in to Building Passive Income. Today's episode helped shift your mindset or gave you a new tool to grow your wealth. Do us a favor and like, subscribe, and share this podcast with someone you care about. Want to go deeper? Join our free passive investor coaching program at passiveinvestorcoaching.com. It's the perfect next step to start building wealth through commercial real estate the right way. Remember, financial freedom isn't a dream, it's a decision, and it starts with building passive income. We'll see you in the next episode.